The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on September 26, 1986 at Detroit, Michigan. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 10, Text 10.
Srimad Bhagavatam, the Mahapurana, Canto 5, Chapter 10, in the matter of Maharaj Rahugana meets Jara Bharata. Text 10. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Abhoy Charana Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada. Fatness, thinness, bodily and mental distress, thirst, hunger, fear, disagreement, desires for material happiness, old age, sleep, attachment for material possessions, anger, lamentation, illusion, and identification of the body with the self are all transformations of the material covering of the spirit soul. A person absorbed in the material bodily conception is affected by these things. But I am free from all bodily conceptions. Consequently, I am neither fat nor skinny nor anything else you have mentioned. Report by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Narottama Das Thakura has sung, Deho smriti nahi jar, sangsar bandhan kahatar. One who is spiritually advanced has no connection with the body or with the bodily actions and reactions. When one comes to understand that he is not the body and therefore is neither fat nor skinny, one attains the topmost form of spiritual realization. When one is not spiritually realized, the bodily conception entangles one in the material world. At the present moment, all human society is laboring under the bodily conception. Therefore, in the Shastras, people in this age are referred to as Dvipada Pasu, two-legged animals. No one can be happy in a civilization conducted by such animals. Our Krishna consciousness movement is trying to raise fallen human society to the status of spiritual understanding. It is not possible for everyone to become immediately self-realized like Jara Bharata. However, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 1-18, Nashta Prayesha Vadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. By spreading the Bhagavata principles, we can raise human society to the platform of perfection. When one is not affected by the bodily conceptions, one can advance to the Lord's devotional service. Nashta prayesha badreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavat yuttama sloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. The more we advance our freedom from the bodily conception, the more we are fixed in devotional service, and the more we are happy. In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya says that those who are too materially affected continue the bodily conception. Such persons are concerned with different bodily symptoms, whereas one freed from bodily conceptions lives without the body even in a material condition. Thus, in the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation purport of text 10, chapter 10, canto 5 of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Jarabharat has been insulted. At least the king thought he was insulting Jarabharat by calling him various names to encourage him or chastise him for not carrying his palanquin properly. The king was telling Jarabharat how troublesome this is, my dear brother. You certainly appear very fatigued because you have carried this palanquin alone without assistance for a long time and for a long distance. Besides that, due to your old age, you have become greatly troubled. My dear friend, I see that you are not very firm, nor very stout, strong and stout. Aren't your fellow carriers cooperating with you? In this way, the king criticized Jarabharat with sarcastic words. Yet despite being criticized in this way, Jarabharat had no bodily conception of the situation. He knew that he was not the body, for he had attained his spiritual identity. He was neither fat, lean, nor thin, nor had he anything to do with a lump of matter, a combination of the five gross and three subtle elements. He had nothing to do with the material body and its two hands and legs. In other words, he had completely realized his spiritual identity, aham brahmasmi. He was therefore unaffected by this sarcastic criticism from the king. Without saying anything, he continued carrying the palanquin as before. As before means that when he was carrying the palanquin, he was very concerned not to get any karmas. He just did what he was told. He said, carry the palanquin, so he was doing it. But when he was walking, he saw there were some ants on the ground. So to avoid stepping on the ants, he was hopping and stepping. But apparently, the technique for carrying a palanquin is everybody has to walk in step, left, right, left. So he's walking left, right, right, left, right, right. And so the whole thing is going this way and that way. So then the king is becoming completely shaken up, and he's afraid possibly going to fall down or something. So he became very angry and said, "You rascal! What are you doing? Are you dead despite the life within your body? Do you not know I am your master? Are you disregarding me and not carrying out my order? For this disobedience, I shall now punish you, just as Yamaraj, the superintendent of death, punishes sinful people. I shall give you proper treatment so that you will come to your senses and do the correct thing." In other words, the king was very angry. Thinking himself a king, King Rahugana was in the bodily conception and was influenced by material nature's mode of passion and ignorance. Due to madness, he chastised Jarabharat with uncalled for and contradictory words. Jarabharat was a topmost devotee and the dear abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although considering himself very learned, the king did not know about the position of an advanced devotee situated in devotional service, nor did he know his characteristics. Jarabharat was the residence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He always carried the form of the Lord within his heart. He was the dear friend of all living entities, and he did not entertain any bodily conception. He therefore smiled and spoke the following words. So then he was speaking. The great Brahmana Jarabharat said, "My dear king and hero, whatever you have spoken sarcastically is certainly true. Actually, these are not simply words of chastisement, for the body is the carrier. The load carried by the body does not belong to me, for I am the spirit soul. There is no contradiction in your statements because I am different from the body. I am not the carrier of the palanquin. The body is the carrier. Certainly, as you have hinted, I have not labored carrying the palanquin, for I am detached from the body. You have said that I am not stout and strong, and these words are befitting a person who does not know the distinction between the body and the soul. The body may be fat or thin, but no learned man would say such things of the spirit soul. As far as the spirit soul is concerned, I am neither fat nor skinny. Therefore, you are correct when you say that I am not very stout. Also, if the object of this journey and the path leading were mine, there would be many problems or troubles for me. But because they relate not to me but to my body, there is no trouble at all. Then today's verse was that fatness, thinness, bodily and mental distress, thirst, hunger, fear, disagreement, desires for material happiness, old age, sleep, attachment for material possessions, anger, lamentation, illusion, and identification of the body with the self are all transformations of the material covering of the spirit soul. A person absorbed in the material bodily conception is affected by these things. But I am free from all bodily conceptions. Consequently, I am neither fat nor skinny nor anything else you have mentioned. Touché. So, the king got more than he bargained for. He was a person very proud, thought he was a king, was in the bodily conception of life. He thought, this is a coolie, this is a peon, and he should be doing what my service, he's one of my subjects, and I'm his lord. And when he wasn't doing his job, he got angry. He thought that I'm the controller, and this person is not being controlled properly. Therefore, to control this person, I have to insult him and deflate him and threaten him and get him to subjugate his consciousness to mine. So, according to Harabharat, after already being through two different births, after being the emperor of the entire world and then renouncing, then getting attached to a deer and becoming a deer, and this time totally being self-realized, he was ready for anything. He'd already gone through much more serious things than this. He'd been kidnapped by the pujaris of Bhadrakali, been taken and bathed and put white cloth on, put right on the sacrificial altar. The pujari was, you should, someone could tell this pastime to, anyway. And was ready to have his head chopped off. He was just chanting, he was just meditating on Krishna. He was ready for whatever happened. Didn't make any difference to him. He simply was somehow or another keeping his mind on Krishna, waiting for this time when he would leave the body. He wasn't going to think of anything else. If it was going to leave by getting his head chopped off, that was very, because he was just thinking of Krishna the whole time, waiting for the axe to come down. He was ready for anything. He wasn't just clinging on the lotus feet of the Lord, because after blowing it, he wasn't going to make after completely messing up and thinking of a deer when he left his body, taking a deer birth and keeping his saying, he was having remembrance of the three births. This time he was totally fixed that he wasn't the body. After you've taken birth as a deer, and you've been, but you can have your human remembrance, because then this time he takes another birth. So he was very sure that he wasn't that body. He was very sure, remembering the three births, that he wasn't the body. So, when the king was threatening him and everything, it was actually his mercy. Oh, and so when he was ready to get his head chopped off, of course, then, being such a great devotee, Bhadrakali herself manifested out of the deity along with her Pisacha associates, and proceeded to decapitate all of her pujaris, showing that the devotee of Krishna is more dear to Kali, more dear to Shiva than her own devotees. In India, this is actually an important point. People, they spend so much time worshipping Shakti, worshipping Shiva. They don't realize that the dearest to the Lord, the dearest to even Kali or Durga, is Krishna's devotee. Dearer to Shiva than anyone is the devotee of Krishna. That's why Lord Shiva came out of his own lake in Kailash when the Pachetas were there, and said, because you are devotees of Krishna, you are very dear to me, therefore you're the devotees of Krishna, the most dear to me, I'm going to give you spiritual knowledge. Then he taught them his stotram, or prayer, in glorification of Krishna. So, here the king, he was in his bodily concept of life. So he was chastising Jarabhart. Actually, in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, verse 12, where it gives the 20 factors of knowledge, there it mentions that to be free of the bodily concept of life is one of the factors of knowledge. And that false ego or identification with the body of the self, one should be free of that, because that is one of the aspects of ignorance. So this king is in ignorance, and Jarabharat is in knowledge. So he's... Normally people in ignorance, one fears to give them knowledge, they may get angry. But in this case, Jarabharat, he's so free from the bodily concept of life that he doesn't have any duplicity. One of the other factors of knowledge is known as simplicity. Simplicity means that you can tell the truth even to an enemy with such straightforwardness without duplicity. So Jarabharat, he just, without any, he was so simple that he was chastised all these things, he just simply gave his reply without considering anything else. Just telling, this is the truth, he just told it. Someone might, in a bodily concept of life, might be afraid that if I say something like that to the king, he's going to come down and really beat me. But Jarabharat was actually completely free from the bodily concept. We cannot imitate that 100%. His position was very unique. As I say, a devotee is accosted in Sankirtan. One can take action to protect the body, even if one may not consider oneself to be the body, so long as one is using the body as a vehicle. One can take steps to protect the body. Just as Nittai and Haridas, when they went and preached to Jagai Madhai, and Jagai Madhai started to chase them, then Nittai and Haridas, they started to run. Jagai Madhai were saying, beat them! Who are they telling us to cheer Hare Krishna? We're going to give them a lesson. Beat them! Get them! So then Haridas and Nittai were running. Wasn't that they were in any bodily concept of life, it's just that they were protecting their body for further service. Of course, Haridas Thakur was a bit older. Because of his age, he was being hard-pressed to run from Jagai Madhai. So he said, I don't know how much further I can go. So then Nittai and Haridas, then they finally went into one little alleyway and they hid behind a trough for feeding the horses. Jagai Madhai looked, didn't see him, went on. This way they escaped. So here, Jarabharat, he's just directly telling the king, this is where, this is. What you're saying is contradictory. These things are correct, these things are incorrect. So, he goes on to give more instructions, which are very illuminating. So, the conception, of course, in America or in the Western world is very much in tune with this king's perception. People very much absorbed in the bodily concept of life. And therefore, these things mentioned here have the reverse effect. Fatness and thinness, people are very upset. If someone's too fat, too thin, they get all worried. If you show some kind of bodily distress, you show a picture of the the Sudanese, whatever they are, I don't know, the Ethiopia or something. Then people, they become very distressed to see their bodily distress, to see thirst or hunger. They identify so strongly with thirst or hunger that if they see that, they become very affected. Of course, even a Vaishnava doesn't want to see anyone suffer. Vaishnava has a broader vision that beyond the bodily suffering is due ultimately to an identification with the body, and that one should not simply think how to end the immediate distress, but rather how to permanently end it by giving spiritual knowledge. Sometimes people say they're not afraid of death, but Srila Prabhupada explained that this is totally artificial. But everybody is afraid of death. When some danger comes, then immediately they become disagreement or arguing between two people. This is very prevalent in the bodily concept of light, because each body has its own set of senses, and the field of the senses have different type of desires. So it's never that two bodies are exactly in tune. Even though husband and wife, by fire sacrifice, they're united together and they become one, that if the goal of life is kept as satisfying the senses, then there's bound to be conflict. In India, it's customary that the people come up and they want to touch the feet of a guru. They want to get ashirvadam, or blessing. But then, if you ask, what blessing do you want? And they say that, my husband's got an ulcer, please bless that it goes away. Or my son has got final exam coming up, please bless that he passes. Something, they always give some material thing. You know, even the most pious ladies who are there with attending all the functions and everything, they come and say, the only thing I want, I don't want anything from Krishna, I totally want selfless, only thing I want is my family will be very happy. For myself, I don't want anything. But just may my family be all peaceful and happy. May they all have plenty. And then what is the concept of peaceful and happy? Totally all material happiness. They would all be peaceful and happy if they were Krishna conscious. But that concept they don't have. So Gaurakishore Das Babaji, he was being barraged. As soon as it became known that he was a Siddha Purush. He was someone who had mystic opulence. He had pure devotion. Then everybody, from far and wide, they are coming to him. Just like with Madhavendra Puri. Because India is a very pious place. Just like we heard last night from Atma Tattva Das, who has... not here right now. He was telling about how Jagannath Puri, when they have the annual car festival, that the carpenters come from thousands of miles to practically wrestle with each other any way they can to be able to participate in building the Rath car. Because for every nail you hammer in either Rath car, you get one less birth. And so they're trying to do their, just want to go there to get, to be able to hammer as many nails in the Rath car as they can. And he explained that there's, even in the Rath car, there are far more joints and nails than normally are needed because they want to take advantage of every, opportunity. So, people that have a piety, they're very, to get dharma, artha, kama, moksha, they're very enthusiastic. So, just like Madhavendra Puri, when it was revealed that the deity had stolen the cure for Madhavendra Puri, then everybody wanted to come and see, who is this great devotee? Let me get his blessings. But he ran off first. So they wouldn't get bombarded. Now it's not so bad, even if someone knows they're a pious person. Kali Yuga has said it a little more. They are not, in all the places, they are not so eager, but still that tendency is there. But the time, even 100 years ago, people were even more pious than today. So Gaurakishore Das Babaji was being literally plagued by so many people coming. But no, not one person was asking him, give me the Harinam. Why are you so great? What is your secret? Tell me, you know, they're simply saying, give me your blessing. Oh, you're great? Give me your blessing. I want to have a good house. Anything. So, he was kind of disgusted by the whole thing. So he went and he used to chant his japa right next to the public urinal. I don't know, even today in Navadvip, the public sewage system has not been changed. It's all open air. And runs by gravity system. So that means for a few miles, while the gravitation is slowly moving, the night soil and things, you get the aroma on the side of the road. So Navadvip is famous for having its own brand of incense. The devotees, when they go there, they're able to still see the this kind of natural system. So the public urinal was no better. It's not like the public urinal in the OK camps or something in America or the rest stops. Public urinal means that it's simply a place where everybody goes and relieves himself, and the urine just kind of sits there. And the sun dries it up, and that's about it. And they don't put, you know, even any kind of DMT or anything like that on it. So it was a very smelly place. So nobody liked to go there for very long. They want to go do their business and get out. So anybody that was in the bodily concept of life, they're not going to go there. So then Gaurakishore was a bit smart. He said, all right, I'm going to sit here. Then if somebody is not in a bodily concept of life, they don't care what it smells like, they're going to come to get spiritual knowledge. But all those people are going to come to me for some material benediction, because they're going to see this is a materially bad place. They're not going to come here. So that was like a kind of a trick. Prabhupada said that he had actually a pretty great sense of humor. So for one time, one very big kind of like a small king, a zamindar, came to him and said, I'm going to have a big Dharma Sabha, and I'm going to have all so many religious people come there and speak. So I want you to come there and be the president of the assembly. He said, no, you simply want me to go there to enhance your own name and fame. If you get the big some famous sadhus there, you'll become more famous as a pious man. So you want to simply exploit me. You want to take me and then use my name for your own name and fame. What is the use of me going there? No. Not that. No, I'm simply coming as your disciple. I'm coming as your disciple. Disciple means he follows the orders of the spiritual master. Not that he just takes the spiritual master and uses for his own name. No, I'll do whatever you say. I'm your disciple. I'm your servant. Whatever you say, I'll do it. You're just saying that you won't actually do it. No, whatever you say, I'll do. But all right, if you'll do whatever I say, then you just stay here with me and chant Hare Krishna. That's exactly what happened. Please don't mind. So, he was very clever. It wasn't that Gaurakishore wasn't a preacher. But he wanted to preach pure devotion, I'm sure. But he was very humble because he was not educated, didn't know how to read and write. He was a bit humble. But one time someone criticized Bhakti Siddhanta and said that why you are a Goshti Anandi, your guru is a Bhajanandi. You should also be Bhajanandi. It was another, a so-called Bhajanandi who was criticizing him for being a Goshti Anandi. He said, you think my guru is a Bhajanandi? How he has inspired me with such a desire to preach? He's inspired me to spread this movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's not a Bhajanandi, he's a Goshti Anandi. He desires the whole world be Krishna devotee. Actually, Gaurakishore Das Babaji was he was totally out of the bodily concept of life. He would eat out of a skull. He'd eat out of a skull just to remind himself how he wasn't the body. So he was doing very severe austerity. Some devotees of Lord Chaitanya are very austere, some are very opulent. Different types of devotees are there, different types of characteristics. But just like there's another devotee who I mentioned sometime because we have our temple at his birthplace, Pundarik Vidyanidhi. Pundarik Vidyanidhi was a very great devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In fact, Lord Chaitanya would feel separation from him sometimes. He would call out for him, Pundarik, Pundarik.
When he saw Pundarik, he would embrace him. He would accept him as a senior devotee. Of course, Pundarik the Divinity was actually the father of Radharani, come again to assist Lord Chaitanya. He was Vrishabhanu. He became the guru of Garadhar. He was very, very wealthy. When he moved about with the total, with so much wealth and pomp and palanquins, the whole thing. The people thought that, he's just a materialist. But if he saw anything that reminded him of Krishna, he would go immediately into separation and faint. If anyone sang a song about Krishna something, as soon as he remembered Krishna, he would forget everything. He totally detached. He was so fixed in remembering Krishna. Madhavendra Puri was like that. Actually, Madhavendra Puri, when he was traveling about, at that time Advaita Gosai was praying that how can we get all these people who are so materialistic, how can we get them into pure devotional service? He was desiring like that, but he felt that without Lord Chaitanya personally coming, how is it possible? So, of course, without Krishna coming, he is thinking at that time very, very urgently how to deliver all these people. At that time, Madhavendra Puri visited the house of Advaita Gosai. And Advaita Gosai could see that Madhavendra Puri, you know, like you say, how's the weather or something? People look so, today's overcast, or there's a cloud, or something like that. Madhavendra Puri wasn't like that. If he said something, and then he'd look at the clouds, and he'd see, oh, the cloud, it's the color of Krishna. Anything he'd look at, he'd think of Krishna, and start going into separation, and start glorifying Krishna. I mean, it was just, whatever he saw, he would see Krishna, and then he would say, yes, today the clouds, doesn't look just like Krishna, and whatever, it was just totally Krishna conscious. To the maximum degree. He was totally, although he was physically visible in this world, he was totally in the spiritual sky. Practically speaking, his consciousness was. So, Advaita Gosai, he got great transcendental bliss in associating with Madhavendra Puri, and he gave him a very good reception. And he decided that I want to take mantra from this guru. Because he's purely Krishna conscious. So Madhavendra Puri gave initiation to Mahavishnu in his form as Advaita Gosai. And then, in fact, when Lord Chaitanya visited Advaita Gosai one time in Shantipur, that time it was happened to be the anniversary of Madhavendra Puri's coming to Shantipur. So he had noted the day when Madhavendra Puri had visited his house. And every year on that day, he had a special puja for Madhavendra Puri. And as soon as he told the devotees, Nityananda said, oh, and he grabbed some chandan and everyone started getting into it. They just started all spontaneously preparing a festival for commemorating the visit of Madhavendra Puri. We're just like, we have a festival commemorating Prabhupada's coming to America. But this is a common thing that in India, wherever Lord Chaitanya visited, if they know the day, that day will be celebrated as a special. It's called like Gauranga Agama, Suagama, the arrival of the Lord on this day. For instance, the Panihati festival, the Chiradoi Mahutsav, the time when Nityananda arrived to Panihati, and they had that festival. They keep that date, and then every year they're holding that. Or there's another festival which comes again in the October, which is called the arrival of Gauranga. When Gauranga had come to Panihati personally on his way to Jagannath Puri, they celebrate that coming. And they keep the date. So, for some temples, Prabhupada only visited once. For some temples, only Madhavendra Puri came once. But they're celebrating every year. We have an annual celebration of Prabhupada's arrival in Atlanta, where he came twice, once in the airport and once to the temple. And the devotees for hours and hours discuss every little thing We bring in devotees who were there at the time from different temples. And they mention every little thing, every move that Prabhupada made, how the devotees were preparing for his arrival, what was the circumstances involved, what were the different mayas that were eradicated, what Prabhupada did. And it's amazing how each devotee had so many realizations at that time, even for a few days association with Prabhupada. There was intense realization of different things. So, Madhavendra Puri, he was such a devotee who was totally in Krishna consciousness. He had no bodily consciousness. And because Advaita saw that, immediately that he was prideless, that he was totally fixed in Krishna, then he took shelter of him. And that became an annual festival. And you'd be interested to know that even to this day, the Saivites, or the worshippers of that temple of Advaita Gosai, it's known as the Advaita Path, or Sitana Path, they still have that annual festival of the coming of Madhavendra Puri. It's actually even mentioned in the Chaitanya Bhagavat how that festival is performed. So, in our sampradaya, we have these devotees, these great acharyas, and some of them were very active in traveling all over the world and preaching, and some had even stayed in particular places or appeared to be more absorbed in bhajan. But actually, the disciplic succession is one of devotees who are very interested in seeing the number of devotees expand. It's basically Goshti Anandis. There may be here and there a few side branches of some Bhajananandis, but the devotees, they wanted to expand the movement of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sometimes people misconstrue that the six Goswamis were actually Bhajananandis. They're only doing bhajan. But Narottam Das Thakur, he clarified that he said the Lord Chaitanya is himself the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has got unlimited energies, just like in the Svaita Swatara Upanishad it states, Parasha Shakti Vividai Vasruyate, that the Lord has got different energies. So he said, like that, Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, and he has got different energies. Some of these energies write books, like Rupa, Sanatana, Bhatta Raghunath, Dasa Raghunath, Gopal Bhatta, Jiva Goshai, the six Goswamis. They wrote so many books. He said other energies, like Srinivas Acharya, they distributed those books. Srinivas Acharya, Narottam Das Thakur assisted him. Shyamananda Pandit assisted him. They took the books written by the Goswamis and they brought those to the eastern part of India, that time of Bharat, near Navadvip, encountered thieves and other problems. They got the books back, even after they were stolen. They got the books copied, and they distributed the books to different pundits. They convinced the pundits that these books are the absolute truth. They give the clearest understanding, explanation of the ultimate purpose of the Vedas. Then after those pundits were convinced of the books, they themselves again continued to expand it, and this way the movement spread like anything based upon the books. Narottam Das Thakur explained how these two types of energies are there, those who write books and those who print books and distribute them. So, of course, it was not that the six Goswamis were bhajananandis and simply thinking about their own personal worship. They may have been totally absorbed in bhajana. A real Goshtiyanandi also is in bhajan. He's also worshipping Krishna. He's an intimate. That doesn't mean that the devotee who's desiring to do the intimate service for Lord Chaitanya and satisfy his desire is not able to realize the highest level of Krishna consciousness. They certainly are. Bhakti Siddhanta said, Pranachi Jarasehi Tu Prachar, that those who have got spiritual compassion and light, Those who have got real spiritual quality, they have, they preach out of desire to satisfy the Lord. Preaching is not a material activity, it's actually a very intimate service. So, six Goswamis are doing the greatest preaching. Just like we see that it's difficult, Prabhupada used to complain that when he would travel a lot, it was hard for him to write. He'd go and stay one place for 2 months and he would write. If you're traveling a lot, it's very difficult to write. So they didn't travel a lot. After Lord Chaitanya left the planet, they went to Vrindavan and sat and they wrote all of his books. And then they left the planet. Because they gave the duty for the next generation to distribute the books. Srila Prabhupada, of course, Srila Prabhupada is just astonishing because he embodies all these qualities. He simultaneously wrote the books, got the books printed, organized the distribution, did everything. During his lifetime, over 100 million books had already been distributed because of his pushing, his preaching. So at the same time he was writing the books. So that's unique. And the entire disciplic succession from Lord Chaitanya on, apart from, of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta, that particular quality is very unique. Of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote and also printed and distributed his books, but then he didn't make temples so much. He made a temple at the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. And Bhaktisiddhanta further expanded that and made the printing press, books, temples. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur had the Namhata, which Prabhupada told us to do, to expand the Varnashram. I mean, you see what the different previous acharyas did. Some did more of one thing or another, but Srila Prabhupada did something of all of the different aspects. Therefore, he's completely, you can see how he's embodies all of the great qualities of the previous acharyas. It's very evident. Therefore, this Krishna conscious movement is dedicated to preserving Srila Prabhupada's teachings, preserving his message, and to spreading it all over the world. For the next 10,000 years, it was predicted Lord Chaitanya's movement would become the world's religion, world's way of life. So we are dedicated to first implementing that and then maintaining it. Of course, Prabhupada, he left us when we were in a very infant stage. Actually, when Srila Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, I remember one day a group of very big industrialists, they're heads of the Vishwa Hindu Parishad. One of them was his father was a very close associate of Gandhiji. So they're very big people with the government, with the politics, with the Hindu movement. They came to Prabhupada and they asked him, who is going to be the next? And who's going to be the next? The first Prabhupada said, all my followers, they're going to carry on my message. All my disciples. So then when they left, Prabhupada said they wanted to know whether I was going to appoint them. They wanted to be the sole authority in the movement. Where they just came out of the sky blue, life members, Hindu leaders. They were hoping that somehow they would be given the huge assets of ISKCON all over the world. The Prabhupada called the GBC members to his side when he told them that he was going to leave the planet, that Krishna was calling him. And at that time, he said that, they said, well, Prabhupada, when Bhaktisiddhanta left the planet, you said that he was very disgusted with his followers. So are you leaving because you're disgusted with us? Because we've been so offensive? Or he said, no. No, you're all sincere devotees. You've been serving very nicely. I'm not leaving for that reason. Krishna is simply calling me. He said, that's the thing, is that just like these people have come here and they've asked who's going to be, there are many people who are going to try to stop this movement. The world there is like a kind of an ocean with huge Tamingala sharks and whales and all kind of, that you are all very innocent, you're all very naive, you're all very new. He said that any one of you can be bewildered by the material energy. It's very complex, it's very dangerous. You have to all stay united. If you don't stay united, then any one of you, by yourself, you can be misled. But I have confidence that if all of you together, 20 of you, that time there were about 20, if 20 of you try to implement my desires, then you won't make a mistake. Of course, the key word there was implement my desires. That our only purpose is to implement Prabhupada's desires. Not to implement the desires of the massive Americans or Europeans or anyone, or to implement the desire of Indra or Ganesh or anyone. Simply implement the desire of Prabhupada. If we're fixed on that particular, what did Prabhupada want? What would he have done? What was his desire? If everybody thinks that particular thought, then there's a better chance that we'll come up with the right conclusion. So of course we see that in the movement, there are so many tests that come up, and that in preaching, Prabhupada advised us to watch out for different, he said, well, some very overt dangers are there, some very obvious dangers were there in India. He said, in Bombay, there's the municipality, they're trying to take over our property. In other words, watch out for the government, that they don't try to take our lands. Here in America now, we see how the so-called anti-cult groups are trying to take over the properties of the Krishna conscious temples in order to stop this religion, this spiritual movement. You see, those weren't there when Prabhupada was present, otherwise he probably would have mentioned that, but they were trying to take over our temple in Bombay. They had bribed police and done various subversive things. So he said, watch out for these things. And he said, watch out in Vrindavan, there are so many Goswamis who like to spiritually infiltrate and take over the movement by giving their ideas rather than the ideas that I have given you. And he said, watch out in Mayapur, Navadvip, there are so many God brothers. These God brothers, they may try to, they're also very, very dangerous. They cannot do anything to help you, but they can do a lot to harm you. They try to impose their concepts and take over the movement. So, Prabhupada's vision of how he balanced everything, how he could see very clearly what the previous acharyas wanted and how he applied it to the modern time in the most practical way. That vision is actually what we are all dedicated to further. Prabhupada said that anyone who's my disciple is my disciple. Anyone who takes initiation from any one of my disciples is my grand disciple. So everyone is connected with Srila Prabhupada. They're part of his disciplic succession. And no matter what happens, we have that direct connection with Srila Prabhupada. And our only duty is ultimately, whether we're children or grandchildren or great-grandchildren or great-great-grandchildren or 50 generations from now, is to carry on Srila Prabhupada's desire for spreading Lord Chaitanya's message, for establishing Lord Chaitanya's desire in the entire world. Prabhupada doesn't have his own desire. His desire was only to spread Lord Chaitanya's desire as was manifested by the previous acharyas. So, I'm reading about these great devotees like Jara Bharat, who didn't have any bodily concept of life, who were totally on the Brahma platform, totally on the transcendental platform through their devotional service. And how they would preach to the ignorant people. And we can see that how we have to also then take these teachings Prabhupada has given us. He's put his own, these books, these verses, these purports, are actually his personal ecstasy. When he's writing this, it wasn't just like someone writing and, you know, translating, like you hire a translator. It's actually his purports were his own personal ecstasy. At the present moment, all human society is laboring under the bodily conception. Therefore, in the Shastras, people in this age are referred to as Dvipada Pashu, or two-legged animals. No one can be happy in a civilization conducted by such animals. Our Krishna consciousness movement is trying to raise fallen human society to the status of spiritual understanding. And Prabhupada's writing this, you know, in a complete transcendental mood of compassion and ecstasy, trying to bring the entire human civilization up. He wrote this so we can understand the perspective that unless we are able to uplift the people to a spiritual concept, to get them out of this gross bodily concept, they're never going to be happy. There can't be any happiness. No matter how much donations they send to the suffering people in Africa, there's still going to be problems in the world unless people get off above the bodily concept. Unless a human society is raised up to the status of spiritual understanding. So all these lessons are actually Prabhupada's special instructions for all of his followers, so we can carry on the movement of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that we can know what was his desire. For we need to read these things every day. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. We need to remind ourselves every day, like a type of spiritual bath, where every day we read Srila Prabhupada's words, and they fix in our consciousness what is our purpose, what is our objective, what is the proper frame of mind to have in order to be free from bodily concept, to be fixed in devotional service, and thus to be blissful. So, it says that even if one gets one syllable from a guru, what to speak of a whole mantra, person is eternally, just to get one letter, one akshar, one letter from a spiritual person, you become, for that spiritual gift, you become unlimitedly indebted. So, here we're getting so many thousands of verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam with so many purports which have thousands and hundreds of thousands and millions of aksharas or letters. So then how great is our, and everyone in the future who receives these books, how deeply they're indebted to Srila Prabhupada for what he's given us. So therefore, we labor in the Krishna conscious movement, but this labor is not a labor of the body, it's a labor of love. Therefore, by serving in Krishna consciousness, once if we keep our consciousness purified by chanting, we are able to experience transcendental bliss. It's a labor of love, and we should work in that consciousness. If we start to take start to see things in a different way, and we're doing our service, it becomes a burden. And we think that, oh, taking these deities is a burden. Taking this spiritual responsibility is a burden. Then that means that we're finished. Burden of love means it's no burden at all. The mother is carrying the baby she loves. She doesn't consider it to be a burden. Everyone else, they can't figure out what is the mother lugging around that, bundle of whatever. But for the mother, she loves her child, so for her there's no problem. She likes it. At least civilized society. So, like that, the Krishna conscious movement, we have to purify our consciousness so we see the things as a labor of love. And when we see that, then there's no difficulty in taking so much responsibility. Prabhupada took responsibility to deliver the entire world. But if we start to see our consciousness becoming affected, and we start to see things that, oh, this is a burden, there's so many deities to dress, so many things to do, that means that our consciousness is not developing properly, and we have to then start to take more care to the fundamentals and purify our consciousness and root out any misconceptions that may be there. Root out these bodily conceptions. In the Bhagavad Gita, here in the Bhagavatam, it says that whatever is bodily conception of life, that should be given up. Giving it up is knowledge, and maintaining it is ignorance. So we should, kama samaj utirgama, we should give up the ignorance and accept the knowledge. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Any questions? Bahari's story, Prabhu's Mayapur writing his memoirs of Srila Prabhupada, his daily diary, all the things he has a very good memory, and he has it all written out. So he's also written, there was a time when Prabhupada was in Gujarat, and he was giving a lot of lectures how he wanted to preach in the villages. I didn't know that at the time, but simultaneously I got a lot of desire to, when we had the attack in Mayapur, and then I got the people organized to, the communists wanted to close our temple down and give it to them, to another religion, for making into a type of, so I got the local people to become very active, and we had a big procession with about 25,000 people. And about 168 kirtan groups. And when we did that, then everything, we made a march right through the villages of the different religions that were creating some problems with us, and everything became very peaceful after that. And the government, they thought that we should withdraw the case. It was a false case that they did against us, saying that that Bhavananda had fired on innocent people, when in fact, they attacked us, and they were breaking the temple apart, and they were beating them, they had broken the arm of our headmaster of the group, who had done so many, and they wouldn't have stopped if we hadn't used force. So, it was 1977. Prabhupada said that he was supposed to be in Mayapur at that time, and that they were going after him, but instead he took the brunt. He's actually very pleased with the sacrifice that Bhavananda had made at the time. So that I was there, they were all in prison. I had to go there and free him. And the police said, well, the judge said, we can't free him because the village is not in their favor. So then I got all the villagers in our favor, and then had a big procession